This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Dr. Frank Mittlener, professor and air quality specialist at UC Davis. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Dr. Frank Mittlener next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. As an industry, agriculture does play a role in emitting greenhouse gases. But agriculture is one of few industries that has the potential to not only reduce emissions to a net zero, but also become a carbon sink for other industries as well. Dr. Frank Mittlener is an air quality specialist at UC Davis. He also leads the CLEAR Center, which works in air quality research and communications. Mittlener says we understand much more about our atmosphere than ever before.
We have a much better understanding today about what kind of air pollutants we have in the air, regions where air pollution is the greatest, and contributing sectors. You can imagine the atmosphere is open, and so it's not 100% clear designation as to who is to be blamed for what, but we have a pretty good understanding of relative contributions of different sources.
Can we accurately measure that our atmosphere is not as good as it was at one time?
Well, it depends on what you mean by this time point in the past. I mean, obviously, if you are talking about 100 years ago, then no, because those pollutants weren't measured yet. But we can pretty much deduct that because we know what kind of pollutants are emitted today by different industries, we can deduct how things have progressed since.
I saw a study recently that suggested in the U.S. agriculture emissions were at 9.4% of total emissions. Do you have other studies, or can we suggest what role agriculture plays in carbon emissions or what's detrimental to our atmosphere?
Yeah, so we have to separate general air pollutants versus greenhouse gases causing global warming. The general air pollutants are those that contribute to poor air quality, let's say smog and particles in the air, things that affect human health. The greenhouse gases that you're referring to now, like CO2 and methane and others, they are trapping heat from the sun, and they are these gases that contribute to the warming of our planet. Agriculture in the United States is responsible for about 9 to 10%, and that hasn't really changed over the last few decades. It's also very similar to other developed countries. So that is all of agriculture, okay? This is animal and plant agriculture combined. Animal agriculture alone in the United States, so all beef, all dairy, all swine, all sheep, and so on, animal agriculture alone is responsible for 4% of all greenhouse gases in the United States.
So with regard to livestock, can we break down the figure of bovine animals, both beef and dairy?
Yes, we can. The beef sector is responsible for more than the dairy sector, but that makes sense because we have 90 million beef cattle and 9 million dairy cows. We have pretty good numbers on who contributes what.
So in terms of the atmosphere, how do carbon and methane rank in terms of their contributions to greenhouse gases?
It's about a quarter to a third of the impacts of all greenhouse gases that methane is responsible for. So it's certainly not nothing. It's something. But it's not rivaling the number one, which is carbon dioxide, which is emitted every time we burn oil, coal, and gas.
If we can measure where we are today, if we can measure those industries or those challenges to the atmosphere, do we also have the ability to measure, whether in crops or in livestock, practices that are sustainable and that lower our footprint while maintaining productivity?
First of all, in agriculture, we are not just looking at a sector that has sources of greenhouse gases, but we also have activities that are sinks for greenhouse gases. For example, soils have the capacity of trapping carbon from the atmosphere. And indeed, soils do trap about one-third of all human-caused carbon. And it's the plants that take on the CO2 from the atmosphere. They put it into the soil eventually, and their soil microbes convert it so that that carbon that was in the air is now in the soil and stored away. We can quantify it. It's not simple, but it can be quantified. And in my opinion, farmers need to get credit for it, which they currently don't. Other practices, regenerative practices, can also be quantified. And research is going into this direction, but we are in a relatively early stage.
I see you also as the director of the CLEAR Center. Can you talk about your mission there?
CLEAR is an acronym for Clarity and Leadership for Environmental Awareness and Research. And it is a sustainability center. It's a center that deals with how we can be the best stewards of our land, of our animals, of the nature surrounding us, of the products we produce, of the people who work with us. That's really what stewardship means. And by the way, stewardship and sustainability are two terms that really mean much of the same. So we do research in all these fields, and we communicate that research, those findings, in ways that the public and policymakers and journalists and so on, college kids and so on, understand. And that's really a void that had to be filled, because we have a situation where especially younger people ask questions where their food comes from. And because of a lack of response from people in agriculture, many farmers say, I don't want to talk to the media, I don't want to talk to policymakers and so on. Because of that void of their voices in the public discourse, the activists are jumping into it. And when I say activists, I mean the anti-livestock people. And they have very loud voices. They are not out there in great numbers, but with very loud voices. And so we then see mass media giving them as much space as those people who produce all that food. And that's the problem.
I think there is a certain group of people who have a mindset that if we didn't till the soil, if we just left it alone, it would do a better job of carbon capture and it would be overall better for the environment. Is that the case, or does stewardship play a role in helping us capture carbon and improve the atmosphere?
So first of all, tillage is important, okay? We have to till the soil in many, many places and control weeds and prepare the soil structure and so forth for plantings. That is, in my opinion, clear. But the question is, how much is too much? And where can we use less of, let's say, a deep ripping of the soil or so? Where can we leave the soil more alone? Because when we do treat it less, then more of the carbon that was pulled into the ground stays there. So a minimum tillage has been experienced by many as something that will not negatively impact their crop productivity, but it will markedly improve the soil health. For example, soil carbon capture. And so there are many farmers that I've talked to who have done it and who feel very good about it. And it definitely does a good job for capturing carbon and keep our soil microbiology healthier.
What about pastures and hay crops that are used for forages for feeding bovine animals?
So these are very important. About two-thirds of all agricultural land, two-thirds of all agricultural land in the United States is what we call marginal. Marginal means you can't really grow crops there because it's too dry, it's too rocky, it's too hilly, whatever the reason, you can't grow crops there. What grows there is grasses containing cellulose, and the only commodity that can deal with that kind of land, the so-called marginal land, are ruminant livestock. Ruminant livestock, you know, cattle, sheep, goats, they can eat that cellulose that's in the grasses and convert it into meat and milk and so on. And without them, we could not make use of this two-thirds of all agricultural land. So it's very important.
There is a group of people who believe that livestock is something that is detrimental to the atmosphere.
Well, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but not everybody is entitled to their own facts. The facts are that livestock play a very important role in human nutrition. They play an important role in keeping our landscapes the way they are. Some people don't like it. They don't eat animal source foods, and that's their right to do. But it's not their right to tell all the others of us to go the same route. And so they are entitled to their own opinion, and I want to leave it with that.
Cattle are a ruminant animal, and there are methane emissions that come from both beef and dairy cattle. Are there proven and effective ways to reduce methane emissions from these ruminant animals?
Yes, there are ways. There are various ways. Some of them are pretty much outside what people think of. Most people, when thinking of reducing enteric emissions, meaning the belching of those animals, they think of feed additives. And yes, there are feed additives that you can add to the diet, to the ration of those animals, and it will reduce their enteric methane. The more effective ones can reduce up to 30, maybe even 40% of enteric methane. Many of the other additives do less of that, 5 to 10%. There are also now ways of using breeding and genetics, because we know that methane is a heritable trait. You pass it on from one generation to the next, and that means you can now select for high versus low methane-producing cows, and then while everything else is held constant, the one are not more or less productive than the others, you can select only for the low methane-emitting animals, and therefore then have a permanent way of reducing herd size emissions. Last not least, the New Zealanders and others are working on a vaccine for methane, so that's also possible that within the next year or so, a vaccine will come onto the market.
So in terms of reducing methane, I'd like to revisit some of those points. Can you prove that changing the feed ration itself has an effect on the methane from the animal?
Yeah, you can prove that. There are two main ingredients that drive methane. The one is roughage and the other one is fat. So the more roughage is in the diet, the happier are those methane-forming microbes in their rumen. Because these methanogens, that's what they're called, these methane-forming microbes, they thrive off roughage. What counters the production of methane is fat. And so when you look at roughage and fat in the diet, you can pretty well predict how much methane this animal will produce. And then thirdly, in addition to those ingredients, there are additives, feed additives that are applied in very small amounts to the ration of these animals to either change the microbial composition in the rumen, meaning what kind of microbes there are, or inhibit the formation of methane directly. And these things are pretty far developed.
When I spoke with Constance Coleman of the American Feed Industry Association, she mentioned that Europe and other countries have these approved feed additives that are reducing methane today, but they've not been approved in the U.S. You have any reason or idea why?
Yes, I do have an idea why. We have a very rigid food safety system in the United States that treats these feed additives as if they were drugs. That's the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. The FDA has so far treated those feed additives, as I said, as if they were drugs, and to get these things approved is a lengthy and very expensive process. It is very likely that this lengthy process will be shortened and made easier soon because the FDA now views them more as feed ingredients rather than drugs. And that's really what they are. Many of them are things such as essential oils or tannins or so, things that normally occur in all kinds of plant material. One of those drugs is not a naturally occurring additive, like an essential oil, for example, but it is synthetically produced, and that's called 3-NOP or Bovaer. And that one has gone through the approval process, the FDA approval process, and it is about to hit the market.
From that particular product that will be registered or others, is there a way to measure how much methane will be reduced And will it have an effect on the feed efficiency of the animals that consume it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, most feed additives do not affect the feed efficiency or other productivity aspects, but they really only reduce methane. And that's counterintuitive because when an animal produces less methane, then that means less energy is wasted for that purpose. So one would expect that that energy goes into performance, but it hasn't been shown so far. This particular product will hit the market soon, and I think there will be a market incentive because there will be carbon trading schemes that will allow those who use those additives to at least get reimbursed, if not make profit, from the carbon credit side of things.
Would there be anything that would concern a consumer of consuming either a dairy product or consuming meat from an animal that received these additives?
Well, it depends on what kind of additives we're talking about. What's really important to me is that all of the additives that are being developed are undergoing scrutiny when it comes to toxicology. Okay, there must not be any residue of the additive going into meat or milk. Zero. There also has to be the appreciation that there are people only waiting to shoot those things down. They do not want to see lower emissions of dairies and beef operations. They just want to see fewer dairy and beef animals. And that's their intent. And so one has to be careful how to explain how these things work, what is being used and why, and so forth. We have seen with other approaches like RBST and so on, that they quickly can become a subject of discourse, and we have to be careful that these ones don't.
There has been pushback in California against dairy digesters. Some see the lagoons as a challenge, others see it as an opportunity. What do you have to say of the digesters and their effectiveness in protecting the atmosphere?
Well, there's no doubt that the so-called covered lagoons, which are a form of anaerobic digesters, that they are doing an incredible job in capturing biogas, 60% of which is methane. They're capturing it, and then this biogas is converted to transportation fuel. And that then replaces diesel for heavy-duty trucks and buses and so on. That one technology alone has already reduced 4 million metric tons of greenhouse gases, 4 million. The goal for the dairy sector is to reduce 7.2. So that one technology alone will have a very significant part in achieving the climate goals that California has set for the dairy sector, over half. The feed additives will contribute another 1.5 to 2. So if you want to achieve 7 and one technology achieves 4, then that's a big one, and that's the digesters.
What's left then in the digester, the solids, after the gas has been claimed? What's left of that product?
So what's left is everything that went in. So the stuff coming out of a digester, the so-called digestate, contains all the nutrients that were in the manure before. But what it no longer contains is the energy, because that energy has now been extracted. That's the methane. So, but all the nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and so on, is still in the digestate, can still be used as fertilizer for crops.
So if you're a true environmentalist, it seems that stewardship would not only provide nutrition, but at the same time, energy and natural fertilizer.
No, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. To me, this is a win-win. I think most people in the state, in the state government and administration will agree with it. In fact, I've heard some of the people in high positions saying that without technologies like anaerobic digesters, California's climate goals for agriculture will not be achieved. So those people who are critical of just about anything farmers do because they just want to get rid of that part of farming, they are really shooting themselves and our society into the foot, and that needs to stop.
I would think some of those have a mentality that your state would be better off without farmers.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying let's not amplify their voices because they're not very constructive. We cannot do without farmers. California is often looked down upon by other states. But I tell you what, we are an agricultural superpower. California by far is the most productive and the number one agricultural state in the United States. We have 400 specialty crops. Our farmers are really world class, and they want to continue. And that includes, of course, those in animal agriculture. And they will continue. And those people who try to stop them, they will not get their way.
Dr. Mittlerner, I want to thank you very much for joining us again on this edition of Open Mic. Thank you for your comments and your insight today. This is Open Mic today, sir, and you have an open mic for the last word.
I just think that we in agriculture need to be changing the way that we perceive environmental issues, other sustainability issues, because I think that we can seriously become part of a solution rather than being part of a problem. Everybody needs food. 98% of all consumers, 98% of all refrigerators in this country contain animal source foods right now. 98%. That means people demand this kind of product, and that means we need to produce it in the best way we know of. And that includes not just productivity, it also includes environmental issues, animal welfare issues, and so on. We need to understand that. We need to own it, because we are the experts in this field. We need to stop allowing those distractors to act as specialists, which they are not. And we need to be those voices that fill the sphere out there with fact-based information. And that is not just professors at UC Davis. That's everybody in agriculture who is the actual expert in how we grow food and how we should. It's a pleasure for me to be part of the agricultural enterprise overall. Of course, as an academician, not as a farmer, I am delighted to be helping agriculture to become more sustainable. I'm delighted to work with farmers to improve sustainability, and I hope that we can continue our efforts together. I wish all of you the best of luck.
Our thanks to Dr. Frank Mittlerner, professor and air quality specialist at UC Davis, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.